All right, so I'm Heather Glissart, and I am with the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the now called Perelman School of Medicine. Not quite used to having to add that name in front of it, and these are my colleagues on this particular paper. All of us are within the same department there at Penn, although with the exception of our research assistant and my good colleague, Fran Barg, and I are the only non-physicians on the team. But I'm a health services researcher, clinical social worker as my old life, and now do health services research, and I do education for various health professionals with medical students and residents in family medicine, MPH students, and also still do some clinical social work education. Relationships to disclose. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about health care workforce training. And this study that we did is kind of couched within the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and the new charges that we have for our healthcare workforce under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, specifically those around the 32 million Americans who, if things stay as they are after next Tuesday, will be entering the healthcare system over the next couple of years. And specifically within that 32 million, about 17 million previously uninsured will become eligible for Medicaid, medical assistance. And so this represents millions of Americans who were previously marginalized outside the healthcare system and who are likely low socioeconomic status and are a really separate population that not all of our providers may be trained to work with. This work is also informed by the WHO, who says that we are facing a global healthcare workforce crisis and that what we really need to do is revamp our healthcare education. And they call for a transformative scale-up of education for healthcare professionals and specifically focusing on matching those professionals to the populations that they're going to be working with. Two conceptual frameworks informing this work. Specifically looking at the Anderson model of utilization and what, as I outlined before, what the need characteristics are in our population. And what we're focused on are, within the healthcare system, what are our resources? Who are the docs who we're training? Are they trained to work with these new populations? Of course, we want more primary care physicians, and in fact, the Affordable Care Act calls for that. But it's not just about numbers. It's also about that process box. And what happens in the interaction between provider and patient? And can we figure out a way to train providers to work with these previously marginalized populations and be able to understand their life perspective? So, what we were looking to do was to address a gap in the field of the empathy literature, which is quite substantial at this point in time, and really that the majority of the literature that's out there right now is based on self-reported surveys. And these self-reported surveys, Hojat and colleagues out of Jefferson Medical School in Philadelphia have developed the JFP, and it's aim to try to capture this very complex construct of what empathy is, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth. But it is self-report, and perhaps that survey isn't the best method to get at it. We're also looking at trying to get at a non-voluntary sample. So previous literature on engagement with marginalized populations has been elective in nature. Students choose to do this, and so they may be predisposed to be able to be more empathetic with the populations that they're working with. So we wanted to get at a non-voluntary sample. And then finally, those of you who are quantitative, strictly quantitative in nature, you're going to get a little uncomfortable, although I do have one chart in here with numbers to make you feel okay a little bit later on. But this is a qualitative study, and we're looking at expressions of empathy in writings. And then is there any relationship between those expressions and the choice of medical specialty? So, as I mentioned, this is Hojat's definition of empathy. It's a cognitive attribute. It's about understanding the life experiences, concerns, and perspectives of the patient and an ability or capacity to communicate that you understand that. It's been measured almost primarily via this scale developed by Hojat and colleagues. And we know a lot about empathy. We know that physicians who score higher on the empathy scales are more more satisfied professionally. We know that the patients of the physicians who score higher are more satisfied with the care that we receive. We know that physicians who score higher on the scale use less resources. They have lower burnout. And their patients have better outcomes in the areas of chronic disease. So empathy actually matters a whole lot. We also know that physicians start out pretty high, and then we beat the empathy out of you, for those of you who are providers in the room. And we see this happen in a very explicit pattern at two points. Medical students, there's this, they start out very high on the empathy scales, and then the devil's in the third year. And for those of you who remember your medical school training, what happens in the third year? You enter the clerkships, right? And you actually work with patients, and then all of a sudden you're no longer empathetic. And it happens again in residency training. There's this, okay, you get all refreshed and you start your residency, and then somewhere around the second or third year, it's just burnt out of you, and you no longer are able to empathize with the patient population. So we want to figure out how to do a better job not beating the empathy out of physicians, but we also want to figure out how to create experiences for in physician training that will help engender empathy. We want to figure out how to model protecting this attribute. There's a lot of debate on whether or not we can teach it. We can identify it. We know we can feed it out of you, so perhaps we can also increase it. All right. A little bit of background about what setting we were studying. The LCME recommends community-based experiences for medical students, thinks they're an integral part of their training. We know that those future physicians who have experiences working with the underserved go on and are more likely to work with those populations. And we know that students who are satisfied and have positive attitudes with working with those populations are more likely to go on to work with them. And we think that not only because the LCME recommends it, but we think that experiencing patients in their home communities, in their lives, perhaps can do a little to decrease fear and apprehension about working with someone whose background is not like their own. So, as I said, there's some, the effectiveness of teaching empathy is in the community is limited. We know that we can model it in a hospital, and we know that self-selected students can increase their empathy scores. But as I mentioned before, there's some self-selection bias going on. So we decided we were going to study a written assignment that all medical students in our institutions have to go through during the family medicine clerkship module. They receive some didactic teaching on social determinants of health, on the relationship between our academic medical center and our surrounding community. And they are then asked to go out into the community, do a lot of participant observation, gathering information around social determinants of health, and then they are asked, if they feel comfortable, to engage with a community member and ask them what they think their health what the number one health concerns of their community are. They then come back and see whether or not those health concerns that they gather from the community members match up with what EDIC data sources, so expert data sources, tell them are the health concerns of that community. What does the CDC say is going on for that particular community? What does census data say is going on for that community? So they then reflect on that experience, and it's those writings that we drew our data from. We then took residency match data from our institution, publishes this data freely, and we looked at whether or not there was a relationship between the empathy and what specialty they went on to. And then we also were interested, well, you know, are those students who are getting an MPH, for example, during the time that they are getting their MD, are they more likely to be able to be empathetic to these patient populations? So here are some of our outcome variables. I'm just going to say a little bit about the secondary outcome variable. There are two ways of kind of dichotomizing residency specialty choice that exist in the literature. The first is this people-oriented versus technology-oriented. How close do you have to actually get to the patients? Are you a primary care provider, or are you like a pathologist or a radiologist sitting in the basement and you don't really like have any human contact whatsoever. And then the other way that it's been explained is this core primary care versus non-core. And core primary care are the family medicine, internal medicine who do primary care, peds, and sometimes OB gets lumped in there as well. And then everybody else is non-core. And so we looked at these two different ways of describing specialty choice to see if there was any difference in the themes that came out in the reflective writings. We used grounded theory, we used in vivo to analyze our data, and this was, as you saw in the first slide, a multidisciplinary team who was involved in the coding and generation of themes that we found in the data. So I'm presenting on one of the major domains that we found in this data set, specifically on individual perspective taking, and there were three main themes that came up for us. One was this ability to understand the perspective or life circumstance of others. The other was race labeling, and then finally soap notes. So I'm just going to populate the screen with a few quotes that we found that were really stood out to us. The first theme that we had was the understanding the perspective of others. Some students were really able to do this. Their reflective writings were rich in detail about personal lives. They really seemed to connect with the people who they spoke to in the community. They gathered a lot of information and then were able to communicate it. Others were not able to do that. They were very brief, and it was just blurbs of information. There wasn't a whole lot of detail there, and there didn't seem to be any establishment of personal connection or attempt to understand the life perspective of the other. The second theme was race labels. Students could not get away from identifying race, even though nothing in the assignment, nothing in the didactic material that they received instructed them to identify race. Now, this may be an artifact of how we train medical students and how you write history and physical, and that it is left over from always identifying the race of your patient, but it really stood out to us that the students naturally gravitated to this way of describing the populations that they interacted with. And then the final theme that stood out to us was this need to write about the people who they interacted with in a community who were not their patients, who they were going to try to gather some community-level expert information about the health issues in their community. They wrote about them as if they were patients. If you're not familiar with the soap note format, it is the subjective, objective assessment and plan that students are taught to describe their patients. And by and large, this is what our students did. Now here, so quantitative people here, I threw this up here for you. We tried to figure out, did people, depending on their specialty choice, were they more likely to get at that in-depth personal connection with an individual? Were they less likely to describe people just based on the role they had in life or to use the race label? And the story is no, there was nothing there. Nothing, there was no real difference, no matter what specialty people chose. Across the board, they fell into these categories. So given that there were no profound differences in the groups, where does that leave us? Well, we did find that students differ markedly in the depth of engagement. And perhaps what we think is going on is that the way that we have dichotomized specialty choice might be kind of dirty, specifically in that hopefully there aren't too many internists in the room or internal medicine folk, but internal medicine folk in this study and in the literature were included as primary care core or people-oriented specialties, but as you know, they often go on to specialize, and perhaps they aren't at the front lines of primary care, and so it's a little bit dirty in terms of including them in those groups. The themes that we were able to identify are directly related to Hojat's definition of empathy. It was about being able to understand the life perspective of others and being able to communicate, but we know that not all students are able to do that. And these results confirm the findings of the previous survey work on levels of empathy in med student population. There are varying levels, but as I said, there weren't the differences that we thought would come out to us. A couple of limitations. One school in Philadelphia and in a school that has a culture of not emphasizing the importance of primary care. At Penn, we train specialists and we train biomedical researchers, and that's the prestige. And I don't think anybody in that institution would argue against that. So perhaps we didn't see the differences in groups that we thought we would see just by the nature of the institution we're in. This is not about a causal relationship. This is about finding what the distribution of empathy was. And then the final limitation is whether or not we could piece out the parrots. Were they just parroting back to us what they thought we wanted to hear? Were we not able to do anything about that social desirability issue that we thought was going on with the quantitative scale? All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.